Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. Tonight, September 27th at 7 p.m., Story Story Night presents White Lies, Stories of Polite Fictions. So today, we've selected a few stories from previous shows that would have fit in perfectly with this theme too. Featured storyteller Tony McKnight goes first. The original theme for this story was gullibility in June, but as you'll hear, when the white lies start flaring up from this deceptive six-year-old, so do a few other hazards.
Bloody hell.
Nice job.
Right, two things. One, I didn't want to be here tonight. I wanted to tell a story last month about crushes, and my story for crushes was called Skinhead Love Triangle. But I had to be out coaching a bunch of skinheads, and so I couldn't tell that story. So then I had to come up with a story for gullibility, and the biggest story for gullibility that I can think of right off the top of my head is every 4 years, a nation of about 65 million people believe that England can win the World Cup. This is the second story about gullibility that I can think of. Prologue. Richard Rorty, the American philosopher, told me that gullible is a word for cynics because cynics refuse to believe in anything, while the gullible choose to believe, and it's a belief that is rooted in an abiding faith in the good and the decency of human beings. Actually, Richard Rorty never told me that. I just made that up sitting over there. Fooled ya. Guns of Navarone. Da 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 la 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 da 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 da. Guns of Navarone was a film made sometime in the 1960s, which perpetrated the lie that Gregory Peck was a New Zealander mountaineer, Anthony Quinn was a Greek freedom fighter, and Sir David Niven was an anti-authoritarian working-class English munitions expert. I had just seen this film in 1970. I was 6 years old. The rest of this is more or less true. Saturday morning, my brother is nine, I'm six. We're supposed to go to the Saturday morning pictures, which is this regular routine, all preteens gather at the ABC Cinema on Bridge Street in Peterborough, England, and sing a song. The song goes, "We are the boys and girls all known as the miners of the ABC. And every Saturday we line up to see the films we like and shout aloud with glee. We like to laugh and have a sing song, for a happy band are we. We're all one together, the miners of the ABC." Yay. I hated Saturday morning pictures with a passion because it clashed with Stingray. Stingray was a television show in which puppets fought underwater aliens around the world. Okay? And they worked for the World Aquanaut Security Patrol, WASP. Okay. The theme for Stingray went Stingray, Stingray, da 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 da, Stingray, Stingray, da 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 da, Stingray, Stingray, da 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 da, Stingray, 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 da da da. There was another thing that happened in Stingray when a fake puppet, I shouldn't say fake puppet, it was a real puppet, but a puppet with a fake American accent, if you can have a puppet with a fake American accent, would come on and say, "Anything can happen in the next half hour." All on this Saturday morning, they just about had it right. So I fake sickness, victim number one, my mother. She'd also proved to be victims number 4, 5, and 7. But victim number one, my mother, I fake sickness. So it's time to go Saturday morning pictures. Oh, mama, don't feel well. Really? Yeah. You feel all right? No, I feel terrible, mum. Don't want to go. Well, okay. Ben, can you go to Saturday morning pictures by yourself? Yes, mum, I can go by myself. Good Ben. Off Ben goes. 9 years old, this would be neglect, child abuse, whatever you want to call it. But off he goes, trotting off to Bridge Street, up Park Road, onto Broadway, down to Saturday morning pictures. Mum says, well, Tony, you stay in bed. I've got to go to the corner shop. Magic. Off you go, Mum. Mum goes off to the corner shop, six-year-old laying in bed. No problem. 10 minutes to go till Stingray comes on. 10 minutes. 6 years old, 10 minutes. Does anybody remember what 10 minutes felt like when you were 6 years old? Felt like a summer. What can I do in 10 minutes? Look at that fold-out couch in our living room. The back of the fold-out couch sort of swoops down. It's green. It comes in here, and there's a big space, and then there's a bottom where it sort of folds out and pushes in, and the bed comes out, and then it drops off. That looks a lot like the island fortress of Navarone. And I just happen to have some German toy soldiers. I'm going to put my toy soldiers in the island fortress of Navarone. And I just happen to have some British commandos. And I am going to infiltrate the island fortress of Navarone, because if we don't infiltrate the island fortress of Navarone, if we don't blow up the fabled guns of Navarone, the British Navy, which is right this minute sailing to rescue thousands of British soldiers trapped on the island of Cyprus, will get blown to pieces. Takes about a minute and a half to set up your toy soldiers in the back of a folding couch. Takes about another minute and a half to have your Royal Marine Commandos rappel down the side of the couch and into the base, where unfortunately the Germans were waiting. Every commando to a man dead. Oh dear. Royal Navy's about to come sailing by at any time. What can we do? I know, says a brave RAF pilot. We'll launch a suicide attack against the guns of Navarone. We need 6 paper aeroplanes in the air now. Six paper aeroplanes and one old-fashioned gas fire, you know, the kind that had that stone material that was to sort of would get up and heat, radiate heat out into the room as the bars heated up. Paper plane one, stick the wings in the back in the fire. Off we go. Whoop! Whoa, that was cool. Paper plane two, stick the wings in the fire. No bother! Right there. Now, in 1970, there are essentially 3 building materials. There was lead, right, which you painted everything with and you coated everything with and which you ate off. There was asbestos to keep you warm. And there was polyflammable something, which was the single most explosive substance known to humankind. And every piece of furniture in the world was made out of it. Third paper airplane. Oh. Nice job. Mission success. House on fire. I did what any six-year-old would do. I went to the safest place that the six-year-old mind could conceive of, Mum's bedroom. I'm in Mum's bedroom, And this is like my first introduction to the real world. Apparently, it's not that safe. Smoke starts to creep in through the door. Plan B, right? Plan B, if the commandos are all dead, you know, we thought about rescuing the Germans at one point, but then we remembered they were Germans, so we let them burn. Plan B, there's always a plan B. RAF can dive bomb. I can get on the floor and crawl out of the house and in my little white shorts and my little red stripy T-shirt and what was, believe it or not, blondish copper hair. I walk off to the cinema. The ABC. Right? Because I'm thinking, okay, plan B. Go find my brother. I get to the cinema. Plan B has a very small flaw in it, which is that it costs money to get into the cinema. I don't have any because I've just left the house on fire. I'm sitting on the steps and I'm obviously a little upset. I mean, I look like one of those chimney sweeps from Mary Poppins, you know, the little boys dancing on the roof without the dancing and without a big brush. But in every other respect, just like one of those chimney sweeps from you know, hello, Mary Poppins, singly the worst impersonation of an English accent by an American ever. But I digress. I'm sitting on the steps bawling, right? I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't care about the house. I'm like, how am I going to get into the pictures? I'm crying because I can't get into the pictures. At which point an American comes along. This is true. This is where my love affair with America began. And he sees me and he's like, well, young man, what's the matter? And he's got a little kid with him. And I'm like, well, my brother was supposed to take me to the pictures, but he took all the money for sweets and he's gone inside and he's told me to wait on the steps till he gets out. So this American, in my mind's eye, this American looks an awful lot like Don Draper, right? In reality, he was probably like 5'3", you know, probably Chicano, which my dad was. But, you know, that's another story. We're not going there. And he says, well, that's just awful, young man. Here. And he hands me sixpence, two threepenny bits, to pay my way into the cinema. It's about a nickel in today's money. And I go into the cinema. The miners of the ABC, woo! Lights come down, I find my brother, I sit down. I'm like, hi, Ben. Tony. He sounds just like this, by the way. This is one of the things when we know we're brothers, is when we both say my name. So, Tony, what are you doing here? Well, you know, I just told Mum I was feeling better and I thought I'd come down to the picture. Victim number two. Actually, victim number three. The American was victim number two. Victim number three. He's like, really? Because my brother's nine. He doesn't believe anything I say, right? I mean, he had a good reason, but were you playing with my toys? No. No. Well, why aren't they where I put them? Oh, I don't know, Ben. The sparks flew out the fire and they moved and I don't know. Shazam ends. So we're in that awkward period between Shazam and Danger Mouse. And Ben turns to me and he says, did you turn the fire off, Tony? I'm like, oh, yes, Ben, I definitely turned the fire off. I did. Turn the fire off. Ben? Yeah? I might not have turned the fire off. Okay, so we're getting towards the end of this story. We make it through the movies. I haven't confessed to anything. We're walking back down Bridge Street, down Park Road. We see a police car coming towards us. Police car pulls up alongside. Officer gets out from behind the wheel. My mum gets out the back seat. She's on her way to the cinema to tell Ben that I've burned to death. Hi, Mum. What are you doing in a police car? Did you steal something from the shop? Needless to say, I spent several hours being asked, how did the fire start? And I stuck to my story about sparks shooting out. And you all know how flammable all the furniture is today. It's terrible. They should really come up with some stuff that retards fire or something, because this is just dreadful. You know, somebody could die. My brother never believed me. My mother, maybe not. My mother doesn't think that. My mother really has never blamed me for anything in my life. So we'll say she believed me. But you know, back to the American for a second, because you know I did lie about Richard Rorty earlier. I do know him, or I did know him. He's dead now, but he never said anything like that to me. But the American, I think, had a choice when he saw this soot-bedraggled toddler sitting on the steps of the cinema, and his choice was, do I report this family for child abuse, call in CPS, you know, or do I believe that his brother stole his money and I pay for him to go into the cinema? And he chose to believe this six-year-old. And that's more or less the end of the story, apart from the fact that I have never, until this day, told the truth about how that fire started. And if you believe that... You'll believe anything. Cheers.
Story slammer Deborah Smith is next. She originally told this story for the summer theme in August, but in it, we see the polite fictions that cover up the white lies in the American story.
Hello. Once upon a time, cue the orchestra, cue the lights. There was a place called California. It was before Proposition 13 that you know, endorsed greed. But it was a wonderful place. And my husband was a boy there in the 1950s and 60s. And he grew up in a little neighborhood outside of Sacramento. And it was idyllic, except for the fact that it was surrounded by four Air Force bases. But what those Air Force bases did provide was a community of equality. There were Hispanics and African Americans, and we all lived in harmony. I can say that because I'm a white person, but I assume it was something like that. And in school, we read Dick and Jane stories. And I think for my husband, the 50s and 60s was like a Dick and Jane story, except he was an only child. And he was born in 1954 in a town in Southern California called Alhambra, which was when we weren't afraid of the Middle East. And we could acknowledge their great contributions to our culture. And he was promptly adopted out. And he was adopted by a wonderful man and woman, India and Ray Smith. India had been born in Borneo, and so she lived a rather exotic life. And just before they signed the final legal documents to adopt him permanently, the birth parents wanted him back. And they kept him until he was just under 2 years old, and then they gave him up again. And he went back to the birth parents, and so, of course, He was a precious gem. And he probably was an only child because could you invest any more in another one? And they were model parents. They didn't own a TV. Instead, when he was 4 years old, they took him to the library and got him a library card. And when he was in fourth grade in California, you learn about the missions and Father Junipero de Serra and his contribution to the natives. And they traveled the entire mission trail in Sacramento one summer. And they went to all the missions and they learned about all of the wonderful things that the father did. And at the end of fifth grade, because in fifth grade, all across America, we learn about the United States of America, in fifth grade, that summer after fifth grade, they loaded up the Airstream and they went on Route 66 from Southern California all the way to Washington, D.C. And they went to the Alamo, and they went to the Grand Canyon, and they went to the south, to the antebellum buildings, and they told him all about American history. And this was a little boy who was raised in California, remember, where it was beautiful, and there was something called equality. And when he went to the laundromat in Atlanta one day, he looked at the signs over the doors in the laundromat, because they had to go to a laundromat because they were in an Airstream. And he asked his parents in complete naivete, and he said, "Mom, why do you have to take your coloreds in one door and your whites in another?" And that's when he really learned about America. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by founding partners, the Boise State Story Initiative and The Cabin, venue partner, the Linen Building, design partner, Neighborhood All-Stars, and importantly, our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio, who makes this podcast possible. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for the first installment of White Lies from tonight's show. Learn more at storystorynight.org.